Welcome to Lifeline. This is a show where we talk about life, not only physical life, but eternal life in Jesus Christ. In a women's pregnancy center, we are on the front lines as we struggle for the lives of unborn babies and the eternal lives of their mothers as we come to share the gospel of Jesus Christ with them. And we are responding and a direct call from Proverbs 24, verse 11, it says, "Deliver those who are being taken away to death, and those who are staggering to slaughter. Oh, hold them back. If you say, 'See, we did not know this,' does he not consider it who weighs the hearts? And does he not know it who keeps your soul? And will he not render to man according to his work?" Well, we take very seriously that admonition, and we desire with all our hearts to inform women and also their partners what life is in the womb and also what life is in Jesus Christ. Now, we're just one front of this great battle for the lives of these unborn children. If you were listening to Lifeline a couple weeks ago, I was talking to the Olsons, Pam and her son Jared, who are fighting a battle here in Tallahassee through the weapon of prayer, as they are part of the Bound for Life movement and hold prayer sieges throughout the city of Tallahassee, and then a national movement also with the International House of Prayer and the Bound for Life movement. But today, I have a guest who is on yet another front of this cause for unborn lives. And he's a real Jeremiah. I've really admired him, his courage, not only him, but the group that he is associated with as he's out there doing the hard stuff. You know, Jeremiah was a guy who came at a time with a very unpopular message, which was to tell the southern kingdom that basically they needed to listen to the Lord and open the doors and let the Babylonians in and heed the judgment that the Lord had for them at that time, that would be pleasing to the Lord. And no one listened to him. In fact, the whole book of Jeremiah, there's not a recorded convert. There was nobody that listened to his message and affirmed what he was saying. It had to have been discouraging work. Now, I don't think the odds are quite that dreary for the folks that my guest works with, but yet he has a very difficult battle. And I want to introduce to you all today Mike Scrimshire, who is the Florida Regional Director for the Center for Bioethical Reform. Welcome, Mike, to Lifeline.
Thank you, Barb.
What do you think about me calling you a Jeremiah? Do you think that's apt?
Well, that would be pretty presumptuous on my part to put myself in a category, but I do understand the comparison you're making. There's some truth to it.
You have an unwelcome message, but a very necessary one, and that Center for Bioethical Reform has been around for nearly two decades, not quite.
Right.
And particularly the Genocide Awareness Project, or we call it GAP for short, since 1999. Can you describe for our listeners what the GAP events are?
Sure. We visit the larger public universities and bring to the public square, to the marketplace of ideas, an exhibit where we compare abortion here in America and worldwide to other more widely known historical forms of genocide and make the case for the fact that here in America today, abortion is comparable, not identical to, but comparable to, in many ways, other forms of genocide.
And how do you do that?
Well, we bring large graphic images. The ones that we have recently brought to Florida State University were 6 feet tall and 13 feet long. And there are graphic images on these signs of aborted babies, of primarily the first trimester, first 12 weeks of pregnancy, although we do include some late-term photos as well, and we draw the comparison and bring out in the discussion and in the exhibit the similarities between abortion as practiced here in the modern, in our modern day with past forms of genocide that we're more familiar with.
Well, and the reason you show predominantly pictures of children in the first 3 months of life is why?
Well, for many people, in fact, in this country, most people, roughly two-thirds, accept the fact that abortion should be legal during the first trimester.
Mm-hmm.
But when you question them and ask them in detail, do they believe a baby should be, should it be legal to kill a baby whose heart has started beating or whose brain waves are measurable, most, about 60%, will say no. So their answers contradict each other, and it's because of this ignorance that many people find abortion in the first trimester either not to be evil or to be the lesser of two evils,
mm-hmm.
and something that should be tolerated. But when they are given the additional information, many reason to a more humane conclusion that it shouldn't be lawful even in the first trimester.
Well, Mike, can I share my personal story now?
Sure.
Well, you know, we were part, not our center, not a women's pregnancy center, but of course those that are in our circles that love life and unborn lives were part of your work here as far as helping you with housing and all. So we got very well acquainted with your team. And that was in February here at FSU, Florida State University. And I have two daughters that go to the University of Florida in Gainesville. And so the evening you packed up here in Tallahassee, you showed up the next morning in Gainesville, and I got a call from my younger daughter, and she hadn't caught up with me for a while, and she thought she was telling me something I didn't know. And she said, "Mom, you should see this. These pictures that they've got on campus, they're awful. They're offensive. This is just wrong, Mom. I'm pro-life, but this is wrong." And, of course, she didn't know that I had actually spent quite a bit of time with you guys. I knew all about this. And I didn't take the opportunity to give her a counter-argument. I just said, "Hey, would you talk to these folks before the day's out? Walk by the display and enter into conversation with one of them. And just ask them why they're doing this." And later on that day, we talked again on the phone. She was a completely different person. And she says, "Oh, Mom, they were so articulate. They had such good answers and such good reasoning why this is necessary. And the pro-choice people, they didn't do anything except just make statements, just over and over again."
And more of a chant.
Oh, my, very much so. In fact, one of the comments that I was overhearing as you were packing up here at Tallahassee was, "Well, you don't have a uterus, so you can't speak to this." And it's just very nonsensical. And she saw that, and she actually didn't have the courage, I don't think, or maybe the opportunity to enter into conversation with one of your team, but she overheard the conversations going on and was deeply moved. So, Mike.
So you have a firsthand experience within your own family.
Yes. And
we see that a lot.
Well, absolutely. And there are a lot of people probably listening right now that know about your trucks, because CBR also does the graphic images on the sides of trucks that go through town, and maybe heard about, because it definitely was covered in the Tallahassee Democrat and the FSU, heard about this event from the newspaper. They've already judged you. You're radical. You're out there. This is offensive, like my daughter's reaction early that morning. But they haven't heard from you yet.
Right.
And I would like for you to take this opportunity and explain why it is that you do what you do.
Okay. Well, we often hear things like what your daughter was saying, that the pictures are awful, that they're offensive, that they're just wrong. And it's really quite easy, based on whatever adjective is chosen to use to describe our pictures, to turn right back and say, the reason the pictures are so horrible and offensive is because abortion itself is horrible and very offensive. Very awful, very wrong. And these pictures are an accurate depiction of what happens
mm-hmm.
in an abortion. Abortion is a violent act that takes the life of an unborn baby. The baby really is a baby, even in the first trimester, and abortion takes that life in a very violent way. And the reason we've already talked about why we go on the college campus a little bit, the reason we do some other things like drive trucks around with pictures on the side or fly an airplane with a tow banner behind it or maintain our website abortionno.org is because we will not be able to change public policy in this country until we change public opinion. When most people ignorantly believe that the baby is just a blob of tissue and that abortion is really not that big a deal, they think it is a trivial matter. It takes showing people who the baby is and what abortion does to the baby to persuade them otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same rationale of why it is apparently necessary that we have a Holocaust museum in Washington, D.C., in the nation of Israel. There are people today, neo-Nazis, skinheads, who deny that the Holocaust occurred. And because of the need to prove, in fact, what did occur and to hopefully prevent it from happening again, find it necessary to photo document exactly what took place.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen again and again the power of pictures in other social reform movements, including maybe a very recent example, the civil rights movement here in this country, where America in general, in the South especially, was embarrassed by pictures in the press that showed how African American people were treated if they tried to go somewhere they didn't belong, eat at the wrong restaurant, or try to go to a school that was only for white people.
Right.
Just this past week, you may have seen in the news a lady who was arrested for taking her daughter to a car wash and using the pressure nozzle to spray her daughter
in the face.
That
happened near you, didn't it?
It happened here in Orlando.
Yes.
To settle her down and discipline her and teach her something by using a pressurized hose in a car wash to spray this girl in the face and all around her body. And she was arrested, and rightly so, and it's very comparable to what the police in the past have done when they turn the water cannons on African-American kids in the streets to teach them the lesson. It's the powerful preying on the powerless, and that's what happens in this country with abortion. The unwanted, unborn babies don't have a voice and are not protected by our Constitution or laws. Since Roe v. Wade was passed, the majority opinion ruled that the unborn are not included in the category of persons. Therefore, things like the 14th Amendment that don't allow you to have your life or your liberty or your property taken from you without due process, those protections do not apply to the unborn. And again, it's very comparable to what happened when our Supreme Court ruled in the Dred Scott case that black people were property, not persons.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have any standing in the courts, and they could be treated as property, and they could be mistreated, and they could be killed. And a recent thing happened in the news. A senator was moved to adopt a resolution in the United States Senate because she looked through a coffee table book where someone had published images of lynchings that had occurred here in our country.
Hmm.
And she was embarrassed at the fact that when those lynchings were occurring in that period of our American history, because there was no federal law against lynching, the federal forces could not step in and bring to justice people who were doing these crimes when the local law enforcement agencies refused to do anything about it. Here you had people in full view of the public, dragged from jail cells and other places, and with a large audience of witnesses strung up in a tree and killed, and all of that documented by photographs, and yet no prosecution of the criminals. And those laws were kept from being, there was an attempt to pass a law that would make lynching a crime, but it was stopped by a filibuster in the Senate, and we've seen how effective that tool can be at times to block
certainly
things that need to occur. Anyway, all that to say that it was the power of seeing those pictures that made it's too little too late, but a acknowledgement, a recognition that something should have been done to stop that at the time. And
as horrific.
Description, verbal descriptions of lynchings didn't capture that in the same way today that trying to describe using mere words does not capture the horror of what abortion is to the unborn children.
Well, we do not object to those, though. When we see pictures of lynching, we know they're horrific, and we think it's right and just that we show those pictures to illustrate that injustice.
Right.
And in fact, as far as the Holocaust, we'll even take the movie Schindler's List and bring it into the high schools and play it for the students so they can see firsthand the context of what it was to kill millions and millions of people in these concentration camps. That is not a social offense like what you do. Why is it offensive to see pictures of aborted unborn babies?
Right. We sometimes ask the question, if abortion's such a good idea, why are people so angry when they see a picture of it? One reason, this isn't the whole reason, but one reason is I don't feel any personal guilt or responsibility for what happened in Europe in the 1930s and 40s. But when you recognize that approximately 40% of the women will have at least one abortion during their childbearing days, and there will be men who will have caused those pregnancies, pressured those women to have abortions, paid for those abortions, whether they be the boyfriend, the husband, or the father, there is a huge amount of collective guilt in our society today over what's been happening, especially since Roe versus Wade. And there's a real strong desire not to face the facts of what abortion is and what it does to a baby.
Well, it hits too close to home then.
Exactly.
Nobody likes to have their own sin revealed to them.
We like to talk about the German churches and how they should have done something about Hitler sooner, other than have their people sing their hymns louder when the trains came by loaded with human cargo on its way on their way to death camps. And we, you know, frequently have to do things like the Senate did. Churches, denominations have issued apologies for failing to do more than they did to stop American slavery or to speak up more during the civil rights movements to recommend that African American people, our citizens, be given the same treatment under our laws as the white folks. But it's a little different situation when you're in the middle of a current horrible situation in your country to step up and do what you can so easily advise others that they should have done in the past.
Well, if someone's just tuning in to Lifeline, let me reintroduce who I'm talking to. This is Mike Scrimshire, who is the regional director for the state of Florida for the Center for Bioethical Reform. And their group, CBR, was at not only several universities in Florida, but particularly FSU last February, and had displays where they showed the effects of what abortion is and compared abortion to historical genocide on par with the Holocaust and the lynchings and the civil rights movement. How were you received, Mike, by the Christian community there on campus? How did you feel about that reception?
Well, it's a little different from as we go from school to school. Reception at Florida State was sort of unusually chilly in that most groups chose to just, at best, say remain neutral or quiet about their opinion of what we were doing. There was a group that took, you know, a more active role in opposing us. But, you know, fortunately there was one group that was brave enough to invite us to come to the campus and recognize the value of what we're doing. You know, I think anyone who's honest, even those who oppose our point of view and do not agree with the pro-life position in any way, if they're honest, I think they would have to admit that what we brought to school was a high-quality exhibit, and we conducted ourselves in a professional way, and hundreds, if not thousands, of conversations, I'd say for sure thousands of conversations occurred that were substantial, that actually talked about the key points of disagreement on this issue.
Right.
And where normally you just have this sort of, there's no point, sort of an idea that there's no point in even having a debate, that it's a settled issue, when in fact it isn't.
Oh, it's not. you know, it's interesting. I have two daughters, and they have their own opinions about things. And so I told you about my interaction with one daughter, but the other one is well acquainted with the GAP project. And she differs with what your approach is and my opinion on it. And she says,
no, Mom, that this is, it's too polarizing, that it just hardens heart, it hardens hearts, it drives people away. It actually makes more trouble than the good it causes. And you know, this is, I think it's very healthy because we were able to converse about this and we continue to dialogue in a way that is constructive and not destructive. But I did answer her comments by referring to the verse that we use a lot in our ministry in 2 Timothy 2:24-26. I said, the team with the GAP project did their work according to that verse, which is, the Lord's servant must not quarrel. And as I was walking around that project, I didn't hear anybody in a quarrelsome manner interacting with the crowd. Now, certainly some of the crowd was unhappy and throwing contentious remarks, but it wasn't being returned. It must not quarrel, but be kind to everyone, able to teach. And that's what you're all about, is teaching, to reveal what abortion is and to raise consciousness that it is on par and probably exceeding these other great genocides in our history, because if nothing else, just the sheer volume of the number of abortions that happens. And to do all of this, if perchance that people will come to their senses and escape from the trap of the devil who's taken them captive to do his will. And I see you and your team exemplifying those principles that Timothy laid out, or actually it was Paul to Timothy, in a beautiful way. But it's very difficult.
Well, I thank you. And I'm sure we're not perfect, and it may be possible in conversation to sometimes not always say everything just the way we should. But that's certainly our goal, and I think it normally is we're successful in accomplishing that. You know, we're supposed to expose the deeds of darkness. Men love darkness because their deeds are evil. Mm-hmm. People like to couch the debate on abortion on matters of choice and privacy. But if you or I were aware that our next-door neighbor was abusing his born child, we would either intervene or we would call some authorities to step in, rather, or we should anyway, rather than allow that child to continue to be abused. We all want to have choices. We want a big menu with as many items on it as we can have. And the thing is, right now, abortion is a legal choice in this country, but it's a bad choice, and it's easy to demonstrate that it's a bad choice. It's mm-hmm. a wrong choice. And we know that the first step in changing public policy that we'd all like to see changed is to first change public opinion about, in this case, about abortion and whether or not it is something that should be legal, whether or not doctors who've been trained in the medical arts should use their skills to make a living off daily killing of unwanted babies.
And you're probably well aware with the statistics in Florida that we are, even though abortion nationally is going down somewhat, it's still 1.2 million abortions a year nationally. But in Florida, according to the Florida Vital Statistics, our numbers have continued to rise. In 2006 was 95,500 and more abortions in our state.
Which is about, there's only, last I checked, about 180 or 90,000 babies born. So we're killing about 1 in 3 of the babies
exactly.
that are conceived. Yeah. And it is a Holocaust, not with the capital H, but it is certainly mm-hmm. a genocide of huge proportions. And people who, again, think that comparing abortion to what happened in Europe trivializes the European Holocaust are mistakenly believing that abortion is trivial. Can't really mm-hmm. celebrate seeing total abortions decline from 1.3 to 1.2 million any more than we would celebrate if we found out tomorrow, hey, there weren't 6 million Jewish people and others killed in Europe. After all, it only turned out to be 5.8. It's not really something
to be
very excited about. Also, there's such a rise in the chemical abortions through RU486 and the morning after pill and these methods that we're really not sure about what the total number of abortions are anymore. We're seeing a decline, perhaps, in the surgical abortions, but we also have to remember who's keeping the numbers. Who keeps track of the statistics is the Alan Guttmacher Institute in Planned Parenthood, an arm of the Planned Parenthood organization. And so for those who've come out of that industry, we know that abortions are underreported, that not all abortions make it into the statistical total.
Well, Mike, if you saw no fruit from your efforts at all, such as Jeremiah, there's at least none recorded. No one listened to him. Yet what you are sharing and what the Center for Bioethical Reform organization is sharing is truth.
Right. Well, and we do know. It's difficult to see, to do the polling that it would take to, for example, to scientifically know what were the attitudes toward abortion the day before we arrived and what were they a week after we were there. But what we do, we are buried, really. We receive so many emails from people acknowledging that it was only the pictures that persuaded them not to have an abortion, or right. Had they seen the pictures before they had an abortion, they would have made a different decision. We hear that time and time again. So we do know we are changing hearts and minds about abortion, and through the Internet, it goes on worldwide. Pro-life groups are springing up throughout Europe and Asia and on other continents. And they're being encouraged by each other's activities as they get to know who each other is and
right.
and compare notes on effective strategies in the different countries where they're working.
I believe that will be one of the fruits of your visit this last February, that there will be a student pro-life organization that will be dedicated to advancing pro-life information on the campus of Florida State. 70 names, emails were collected those couple of days where you had your display.
Exactly. Well, that is normally the case. Pro-life groups that are already in existence are bolstered by our visit, and those campuses that don't have an existing pro-life group often form one. At the University of South Florida in Tampa, we had 115 people sign up to start a new pro-life club where none has existed.
Yeah.
So we do see that again and again, because there are people. That's another thing that's very powerful about what we do. We may not, and we usually don't, see someone who's very rigid in their commitment to a support for abortion rights
change their mind.
Completely change and convert
right.
to our way of thinking in after one conversation. We may plant some seeds of doubt or give them something to think about for the future, but where we do see shifts along the scale from pro-choice or pro-abortion to pro-life, and one of the things we see is people who've been thinking and feeling the right things about abortion but doing nothing about it
become
solidified.
Activated. Yeah.
And they decide, you know what,
I need to become part of the action here.
Exactly.
Yeah, and we're out of time. Tell your website one more time.
AbortionNo.org. So there's two N's. AbortionNo.org.
And that's N-O.org.
Right.
Yeah, AbortionNo.org. Thank you. I've been talking to Mike Scrimshaw, who is the regional director for the Florida area for the Center for Bioethical Reform. Thank you, Mike, for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me on the show.
And tune in each week as you hear more of God's life-saving work.